But yeah, that's the other one, is Russia.
All right, you've been listening to Wider Window Poetry on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and my guest this month was Mike Firm.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. All you need is love.
Why do you love KBOO? Tell us what you most love about KBOO Community Radio, and we will use it on air during our next membership drive. Record a one-minute testimonial using the KBOO mobile app, or use a voice recording app on your phone and email it to info@kboo.org. That's info@kboo.org. Thank you.
Love and happiness. Yeah. Something that can make you do wrong, make you do right. Yeah. Love. Love and happiness. But wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone. 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah, talking about how she can make it right, yeah, yeah. Happiness is when you really feel good about somebody. There's nothing wrong being in love with someone, yeah.
Welcome to episode 8 of Stories with Stella, and today I want to dive right in by talking about mental health and the communication around mental health and how important that is, because in my personal opinion, you don't get to be alive without having some mental health struggles. That's just part of the human experience. I truly believe that we all have things to work on at all points in our lives, because we're constantly experiencing new things and new people and new relationships, and how we react and how we process changes throughout our life as well. So the work never really ends. And there's an author named Mark Manson who is fantastic. He wrote a book called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. And his second book that I'm reading right now is called Everything is Fucked, a book about hope. And in The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, his first book that I read, he talks a lot about how people are always trying to be right, to achieve some level of enlightenment or positive validation that they are correct about all of their assumptions. But that's never the case. We don't get to reach that. We are only human. We're only given a certain amount of years on this planet, so we are not really going to ever reach enlightenment. So instead of trying to be more right every day in the goal of being ultimately all right and all knowing one day, just try to be a little less wrong every day. Just try to make a little less mistakes or a different mistake. When we switch our motivation or our inspiration for what we're trying to do from I want to be right, I want to be right, I want to be right, to how can I be less wrong? It's amazing how much the world can kind of open up, and your perception of yourself will also change. If you're always trying to be right and all-knowing, you're always going to fall short. But if your goal is always just to be a little less wrong, a little less incorrect, a little less mean, a little less whatever it is, then all we can do each day is try our best. And if we succeed in being a little bit less messed up than we were the day before, then I feel confident in myself versus the feeling of I'm not right enough or I'm not good enough. I'm just not as bad as I was yesterday or last week or last month. For me, the same concept can be applied to my journey with mental health and with my physical health for that matter too, of being able to get past the idea that there is a cure or I just need to deal with something and then it'll be done. A lot of my own personal mental health struggles and physical health struggles are going to be ongoing. They are chronic issues, and by definition, they will be long term. And learning how to cope with these things as opposed to looking for some ultimate cure has been really essential for me with coming to understand my journey with all of this. A lot of the issues or symptoms that I experience from my mental health and my physical health are unobservable by others, and they fall into a category of invisible diseases or invisible ailments that affect many, 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 many people. Almost everyone I know deals with some form of an invisible illness, something that affects them that's not observable by the eye of somebody outside of it, of their body. And it's really hard to get taken seriously for these sorts of things. So for example, I've dealt with depression on and off for most of my life, since I was about 10 years old. And depression is one that it can hide under the surface, and you can force a smile through it and nobody would know the difference. And it takes energy to hide these things, but it also saves us the energy of having to explain or go out of our way. So instead of telling somebody why I'm struggling and why I'm so mentally and emotionally exhausted, I would just say, no, I'm fine, thank you, and smile and keep on going on. Another example is I've been dealing with IBS for most of my life, which stands for irritable bowel syndrome. So I have intense gastrointestinal pain, chronic pain on a regular basis. No matter the diet change or the medication change, it's been a long journey, and IBS is chronic, and it's something that I may very well be dealing with throughout my life. And it's not consistent. So just because my IBS is chronic doesn't mean that I am in consistent pain 24/7. What it means is that my pain, it comes and it goes and it fluctuates all the time. So I can have moments where I feel good, I feel light, I feel healthy, and then all of a sudden be struck with a wave of feeling like I can't breathe because my stomach is cramping so hard in the middle of the grocery store. Something like that doesn't have a physical representation of it other than me clutching my stomach in pain and grimacing. I'm not bleeding from anything. I don't have a wound. And it can be hard for those things to be taken seriously. My journey with IBS over many, many years, I have dealt with many doctors who have tried to tell me that it's all in my head, that I'm being over emotional, it's just my hormones, maybe it's my diet and my low blood sugar, maybe the moon is affecting me. There's always a million different reasons that doctors can kind of have to talk people away from these invisible ailments. And it's only in the last 10 or 20 years or so that there are more doctors in practice making it a point to educate others, to take people at their word, take people for what they say that they're feeling, not what you perceive that that person is feeling. And the pain scale is a really good example of kind of the outdated measures in a lot of hospitals, because everyone's pain scale is different. The 1 to 10 of a pain scale, 10 being the highest, depending on somebody's experience of pain, a 10 could be stubbing their toe, versus for another person, a 10 could be getting shot in the leg. So pain is a very relative and personal experience. So are all of the symptoms that our bodies can experience from a myriad of reasons, including these invisible diseases. So IBS, it affects everyone in very, very different ways. Depression, anxiety, they affect everyone in very different ways. And another thing that I like to talk about when it comes to mental health is this sense of comparison, or the desire that a lot of people have to kind of compare their trauma or compare the negative aspects of their life. And something that's been made really, really clear to me is that that was a privileged thought that I had of somehow my pain or my trauma being worse than other people's. Because our experiences are so personal. Depending on our privilege of how well off we are financially, how our health is, what race we are, what gender we are, how much we're willing to conform to society's norms. Any individual's experience of trauma to that individual is just that. It is traumatizing. No matter how much more or less traumatizing it could have been for a different person has absolutely no relevance, because nobody has been through the experiences of that individual but themselves to know what the experience is of their own trauma. And to verbalize that to somebody else, that they have been through a negative experience, takes a certain amount of vulnerability to feel safe to tell that to somebody. So if somebody is ever sharing their trauma with you or being vulnerable or intimate, please, please don't ever compare. Please don't ever make them feel like somebody else has it worse and therefore it's okay that they feel this way. All trauma, all negative feelings are completely personal experiences. And if somebody has felt that they have been through a trauma, no matter what that situation might seem to anyone else, please validate their trauma for them. Because if they feel safe enough even verbalizing it and saying it to you, there's a good chance that they are feeling some really intense feelings. That if you've been through any trauma in your life, I'm sure you can relate. And I don't know a single human in this world that hasn't been through some form of trauma or another. And when it comes to trauma, I mean anything that was traumatic. I had my own skewed perspective that trauma was only something that fell under the category of illegal or unlawful or immoral. But what I've come to terms with in my own journey of growing up and being in my 20s and individualizing from my family and taking people off of the pedestals that I'd put them on as a child. And I'm realizing that anyone who's been a parent has first been a human. And to be human is to make mistakes, to fall, to stumble, to bruise your knees, and then pick yourself up and learn how to do better. And with that mindset, some may call me jaded, but it's my own personal belief that nobody's parents have been able to meet all of their needs fully in order for them to not have experienced some sense of trauma, whether it is abandonment, neglect, over-affection, under-affection, not having enough food on the table, whatever it might be. All parents are trying to figure out how to parent either by themselves or with other people or with the community. And they're all going to make mistakes because that's part of just this life. But it's how they handle the mistakes that I think is the most important, and how we react to the mistakes that were made to us. And a lot of trauma that happens, a lot of negative experiences that affect people, especially during our childhoods. Unfortunately, there's a certain amount of evil in the world that does intentionally do that. But even more scary, there's a bigger percentage of people who traumatize people or abuse people or hurt people unintentionally. And just because somebody has good intentions doesn't mean that they didn't also hurt you. And that's something that took me many, many years to come to terms with, this kind of idea of people can have had good intentions. Most parents have very good intentions. There's very few evil parents out there who really just are vindictive and trying to hurt people. Most parents want to do the best that they can. They just mess up along the way. And some of them have too much ego to be able to acknowledge that they messed up and try and communicate and heal with their family or anyone that they might have affected. And some families learn how to take responsibility and acknowledge the times that they were human and they messed up. And they're willing to see that and to acknowledge it and move forward by being a little less wrong the next day, making a different, less bad mistake the next time. So that's kind of my whole roundabout way of saying that everyone deals with mental health to a certain extent of some sort or another. And it's an awkward conversation for all of us because we're not taught how to do it. It's the human experience is to go through trauma, but then for some reason, we're lacking in this culture the human ability to communicate about what happened and heal the things that went wrong, heal the mistakes that happened, and try to move forward a little bit better each day. I'm going to take a little break, play some music, and then come back and talk about consent culture a little bit. So I appreciate you listening to me ramble on here, and enjoy this music.
There's music and there's laughter. I don't know if I'm scared of dying, but I'm scared of living too fast, too slow. Regret, remorse, hold on. No, no, I gotta go. There's no good comes with the bad. A song's never just sad. There's hope, there's a silver light. Show me my silver light. Show me my silver light. I hear a voice calling out for me. These shackles I made in the town to be free. Be it for ease, be it for love, I won't take
You fucking did it. You really did it, yeah. You fucking did it. You fucking did it. All those who hanging around the water cooler will never believe how you tackled a dozen puzzle pieces. And you can see it before we completed it, before we made it whole. How you put it all together with a blindfold. You're like a lone game token who keeps the game going, but you claim the fame as how you like to lay lower than the limelight, which can hurt your eyes. If you're not careful, you'll become another devil in disguise. But you watch your back, you watch your back. Your growing eyes in the back of your head to prevent another sneak attack, sneak attack. You must be keeping secret weapons in your fanny pack. You're like my laughing gas, you got the cat to dance. You're like Lance on the mountain in the Tour de France. You got a wingspan spanning the globe. You got gold and you're teaching us all to let go. You're a wise old owl when you're the cat's meow. If this were 12th grade, you would be my cap and gown. If this were India, then you would be a sacred cow. And I'd bow down to you. So grateful to the gods for making you. You fucking did it. You really did it, yeah. You fucking did it. You fucking did it. La 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 la. You really did it, yeah. You sugar did it. Ba da 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 da. You'll be standing up for the equal rights of the American people, and you'll be meeting all the influential seekers with a similar dream. You got a front seat saved that's ablaze with your name
and a superhero cape on.
See, the future is a sky full of possibility, with a spine as a mind and a psychic ability. You probably won't die at the hand of an enemy and not in the den of iniquity. You're not the average Joe, you're not the average Jane. You're not above or below, but you're never just plain. You never take no personally, and anytime you get stopped, you try another way. Could we settle for a kiss without a cease and desist? If they ask, we will tell, cause we're activists. I am that I am, and you are that you are. What that is how P-E-R-F-E-C-T your A-T-T-I-T-U-D-E-B. What does that spell? It spells you did it. You really did it, yeah. You really did it. You freaking did it. You fucking did it. You really did it, yeah. You done did it. You really did it, did it, did it. Turntable calling the tracks, like you'll be jumping in the water, you'll be making a splash, you'll be keeping the heartbeat going, you'll be keeping the harmony going. Well, there's an awful lot of musical styles you could play. Well, there's an awful lot of tastes, an awful lot of dates you could be on. You'll be keeping your backbone strong, and you'll be keeping the trombone blowing. Well, every friend of mine will give each other high fives when your beautiful mind is to your own devices. You do what you like, and you always like what you try. You touch me like an iPhone application, move me like a smooth jazz music station. Doing what you do in the way that you choose to do them, oh my God. You're quick to be so portable, damn. You got a way with words, you got a magical handshake for saving the earth. You are a generous man, you are so awesome, it hurts. You are A-W-E-S-O-M-E. What does that spell? It spells you did it. You really did it, yeah. You really did it. You really did it, didn't, 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 didn't. You fucking did it. You really did it, yeah. You fucking did it. Didn't, didn't, didn't. You are A-W-E-S-O-M-E. You are A-W-E-S-O-M-E. You are A-W-E-S-O-M-E. You are A-W-E-S-O-M-E. You are A-W-E-S-O-M-E.
Oh,
Welcome back. I want to dive into the conversation topic of consent. It's something that I've talked about a little bit in past episodes with my roommate, Hazel, about in terms of kink and sexual consent. But I want to talk this evening about how consent is very, very important outside of just sexual encounters. I grew up as a hippie kid in a new age community in California, like many, many others on the West Coast and really all over this country, whose parents did not have a good idea of boundaries or consent or what any of that involved. And a lot of what hippie culture is all about is psychedelics. And they call them plant medicines if you want to be really woo-woo about it. But basically, I knew what psychedelics were, but I did not understand that I was too young to consent as a child. And that has led me to want to talk more about consent as an adult with people that I meet all the time, because consent is huge. Our culture tends to really only focus on consent when it comes to going on a date with somebody or having sex with somebody. But in my opinion, consent has to do with every single decision we make in our life. From choosing to spend time with somebody and making a plan with them, to agreeing to go to the same restaurant for some food, all of these things involve our consent and our decision and our individual opinion on what we want to do with our own bodies. So consent is a really important subject that I feel like needs to be talked about in a much more widespread situation than just when it comes to intimate affairs. And I mentioned the psychedelics because there's a lot of history of myself and almost everyone I know who's done any kind of drug of being accidentally dosed by somebody without our consent. And when I say dosed, I mean somebody giving somebody a drug or a mind-altering substance without telling that person that they're going to consume it. And it's something that anyone who's been to a concert or a festival or a bar or really any social situation, there will be somebody who has had an experience of having somebody put something in their drink or give them a pill and not tell them the correct name for what it is. And that's something that is so unregulated because drugs are very, very unregulated because of the criminalization status in most places. So it's not talked about very much how dangerous and how traumatic it can be to give somebody a mind-altering substance without their consent. Everyone I know who has experienced and reported an instance of sexual assault or violation, there is usually a way to follow up with legal action. But in most cases of drugs being dosed against somebody's consent or without their knowledge, it's very, very, very tricky to bring that to a court or a law or justice system and see any kind of penalty for somebody to do something like that. I ate an edible when I was in high school that I thought just had pot in it. Turns out it didn't. It had something much stronger that to this day, I'll never know what was in it, but it resulted in a very bad trip and an uncomfortable 12 hours of my life. So those situations are not uncommon. And some people might think, oh, if it's just weed or it's just something that passes and it's over, it's not a big deal. But if somebody's consuming something that's going to alter their perception of reality, their sensation of themselves, their awareness, their ability to integrate with society has been altered and they're not in a safe environment, that puts that person at risk of harm. Same thing as putting a roofie in somebody's drink at the bar makes them vulnerable to somebody preying on them and victimizing them and taking advantage of their vulnerability. Any kind of mind-altering substance or mind-altering experience without prior knowledge and consent is very, very dangerous. And I'm a hippie kid. I grew up with a lot of psychedelics around me. I grew up with my family smoking pot all the time, and I didn't have a clear understanding of how important it is to know what the substance is and how it will affect you before you yourself take the substance. And so many, many, many people alongside myself tried mind-altering things way too young, like pot. Now, pot, in my experience, has been much more of a medicine than anything and has been a very positive thing in my life. And still, being introduced to it without fully understanding the concept of it altering how my brain would perceive things from a young age is wrong. It's not okay. And my parents, like many hippie parents, were under the perception that they could consent for us. But that's where the gray area of consent gets so tricky, because a lot of people think that, yes, parents can consent for their children for many things. For medical surgeries, if the child doesn't understand what the surgery involves, that is an example where an adult can appropriately consent for the child. If a child wants to have sex with an adult or marry an adult or have an inappropriate relationship, that parent cannot consent in most states. And so to apply that same logic to any sort of mind-altering substance, even one such as marijuana, tobacco, or alcohol, consent really needs to be a big part of that culture and educating our children that until you fully understand this to an adult satisfaction, you cannot consume this. An adult could not consent for a child to be in an inappropriate sexual relationship. Therefore, they should not be able to consent to their child engaging in inappropriate substance use. And the rise of the psychedelic movement in this country is wonderful, and I do think it needs to have some regulation and some awareness and education of these can be wonderful medicines, and they can also cause intense trauma if you don't respect consent and you don't educate people on what that means. And I'm all about the psychedelic medicines. I love them. I think that mushrooms can be a wonderful friend, guide, tool. It can be used for a number of things. And I have known people who have felt like they completely died and left their bodies, and it was the scariest experience of their life for 8 hours while they were tripping balls. That was not a good experience for those people. So a big part of anything that's mind-altering is really understanding what it is that you're doing and knowing and preparing the time and the space, the environment, the people that you'll be around, so that you feel safe being vulnerable. One of the ways that I've been able to learn about consent, since I missed a lot of those lessons as a hippie kid, they were really taught to me within the sex worker, the stripper, and the kink communities. And it's wonderful that a lot of our media thinks, or a lot of our culture thinks, of consent when it comes to sex, because it has really made anyone who's involved in any kind of sex work, whether it's recreational or for work, the concept of consent is very much drilled into those industries. And so the practices are wonderful. When I've gone to kink parties and kink events, the amount of communication, of boundaries, of full awareness of what people are consenting to, is really beautiful to witness, especially as somebody who was raised without that respect of, let me inform you of what you are agreeing to do before you do it. And the kink community in particular set a really, really wonderful example for me and how I learned about that. I've talked about that a little bit in previous episodes. And it struck me recently how it took me finding the kink community to really understand consent culture. I knew sort of what it was, but I didn't get the chance to practice it until I started going to BDSM parties and talking to people in the strip club about their desires and what they wanted during a VIP dance. And it's a similar thing for when people came into the club of, consent was a two-way street. Not only would the customers have to ask my consent to touch me, but I also feel it's very, very important for me to respect my customers and ask them before I touched them. So if somebody was sitting at the tip rail and they were tipping me, and yes, it looked like they had a good time, before I went over and sat on their lap or put my legs on their shoulders, I would ask them in a nice way of, hey honey, is it okay if I come over and sit on your lap? And if somebody looked uncomfortable or froze up or looked like they didn't want to do that, that was a very clear nonverbal sign, even if they didn't know how to verbalize it. Okay, I'm gonna back off and not press into your space too much. Versus some people I could ask, hey honey, do you mind if I come sit on your lap? And they'd say, amazing, that sounds great, here's another $10. And then wonderful, both of our boundaries and both of our consent has been respected. So similar to the kink culture, the strip world taught me a lot about consent and what customers wanted from me in dances. I had customers who asked me to keep my clothing on and if that would be okay with me, which of course I'm happy to keep my clothing on, and that shouldn't be something that's uncomfortable for somebody to ask. Even in a strip club VIP dance, it's not all about the consent of the dancer who's getting nude. It's also about the consent of the person who's paying for an experience. And if they feel that any boundaries are being crossed, it will be a negative experience instead of a positive one and worth the money that they're spending. So consent is a huge one. I'm all about it. I talk about it with people all the time now because it's the only way to get better is to practice and to normalize having conversations around consent when it comes to sex or doing drugs or drinking or socializing or whatever it is, just making it more of a normal part of respecting the people in my life and asking for them to respect me as well and ask for my consent before things. Another really great example of consent culture that I think is wonderful that's popping up a lot more on social media is these content warnings or trigger warnings that people put before their posts, their photos, their videos, whatever it is. If there's anything that might be any way traumatic or offensive or upsetting for somebody to see, a lot of people are now putting a content warning at the very beginning, before you open the attachment or before you read the thing, so that it says, hey, just a heads up, this post includes this sort of negative stuff. And then it gives the reader or the watcher, the viewer, the option to consent to continue reading or continue watching if it involves some heavy content. Now, I have personally a heavy trauma history, and it's been years of me practicing how to respectfully communicate about my life if somebody wants to know. If it involves something that's very heavy, that I give them a warning, I give them the option to consent to continue listening to my story. So if I'm talking about sexual assault with somebody, which is something that I think is really healing to talk about with other people who've gone through similar experiences, if they're wanting to know about something in my life or a certain experience, I'll say, just a heads up, this involves X, Y, and Z. Are you comfortable? Do you have the energy for me to move forward and share this with you? And if they don't have the energy, it gives them the option right there to say, you know what? I don't have the time for this. I don't consent to hearing this kind of thing. Or if they do, then they can say, yeah, I've taken the time. I got a deep breath. I'm ready. I can handle it. And then their reaction is their own responsibility. But when we're sharing trauma, it is our own responsibility to warn the people that we're around what exactly it is that they're signing up for if we haven't talked about it explicitly. That's all I want to say on consent for this little portion. It might be something I'll come back to as I keep learning in this wild life we're all on. Thank you for joining me and listening to what I have to say. I hope some of it feels good, and if any of it doesn't, then ignore it. Throw it out. It's not for you. That's totally cool. Different opinions for different people. I wish everyone the best in their own journeys for figuring out what feels good for us and what feels respectful and where our boundaries are, because, again, everyone's experience is so personal, and I fully respect that. Everyone's got an individual experience, and any way I can help educate others to let go of expectations and just accept that everyone has their own unique experience and perception of this world. And let's just respect everyone's boundaries, okay? Cool. I like it. All right, enjoy this music and have a lovely rest of your night.
Voici si on était les choses. Le chat était assis sur une branche, l'oiseau sur une autre. Derrière la porte du jardin, Pierre observait ce qui se passait. Pierre dit alors à l'oiseau, va voltiger autour de la gueule du loup et prends garde qu'il ne t'attrape. Du loup et tirer des coups de fusil. Pierre leur cria du haut de l'arbre, ne tirez pas, petit oiseau et moi nous avons déjà attrapé le loup, aidez-nous à l'emmener au jardin zoologique. Imaginez la marche triomphale. Thank you.
little honeybee sail on. Sail on. Sail on, my little honeybee, sail on. You're gonna keep on sailing till you lose your happy home. She's been all around the world making honey, but now she is coming back home to me.
Portland.
KBOO Community Radio would like to thank Sarah C., Nancy G., and Curtis C. for donating to our spring membership drive today. Join these generous supporters and help us reach our $60,000 fundraising